Welcome back to Develop Lex. Today you have Weston and Ross in the studio with Richard Polk. Richard is one of the principals at EOP Architects, and I'll let him tell you a little bit more about himself, but we felt it was important as we go through just every facet of real estate that we have, just a variety of guests. And so there's no better person that's familiar with Lexington, and then also just as it goes, as we refer to architects, Richard is very knowledgeable. So Richard, welcome on.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So to get started, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into it. Got to run into you at a UK cheerleading reunion. So I'd love to hear the start from academic to now.
Well, I can do that. I mean, I'm not originally from Lexington. I'm from Louisville. Grew up in Louisville, went to high school there. And actually didn't know how I could get into architecture. So at first I didn't. I said I have to stay home. I didn't have the money to go away to college. And went to the University of Louisville. I was intending to go to Speed Engineering School. But the architecture bug kept calling, and I found a way, and I applied to the University of Kentucky, which has the only design school, still is this way, in the Commonwealth, and was accepted and found a way to make it up to Lexington. But so that's the kind of quickie story there. But I've been in Lexington really ever since. Moved here and then stayed and then opened a practice. And we've now been, we celebrated our 40th year. Can hardly believe that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, been around a while.
That's great. We'll get a little bit more into what you're doing day to day now, but I am curious. I've had, you know, we're recently graduated from college. I've had a lot of friends that have done architecture, or at least started as their major being in architecture. Tell us a little bit. The school is pretty intense, correct?
It is, and it's a selective admissions, so not everybody gets in, but and it's also a relatively small school. Of course, it's been a long time since I've been. I'm nearing the end of my career, not starting like some of you guys. But back then I had a class. It probably started out with about 60 people, and each semester it would get smaller. But you'd have to kind of keep your eyes open to notice who wasn't there, because nobody announced it. You know, when they decided I can't do this or don't want to do it, they would just not come back, you know, after Christmas break or whatever. And probably graduated with about 30 people. And most of those folks I still stay in touch with and know. And a lot of them I went to Europe with, studied over there for a while. And so it's a small community, particularly in Kentucky. And a lot of the folks, the firms that are in Lexington, you know, came from the University of Kentucky. And but I do see now, particularly nowadays, we get more architects coming in from other cities, other states, and we welcome that.
And when you say coming in, do you mean coming into the city of Lexington to be an architect, or do you mean it in terms of the University of Kentucky?
Well, both. EOP, we've grown over the years. We started out, it was Rick Eckhoff and Paul Oshinkowski for 2.5 years. And then I got my license and was literally able to join those guys via a telephone call that I made, because I'd clipped out of it. Back then it was, you know, little ads in the newspaper. And I'd been carrying one around with me for about a week and was up in Minnesota doing restaurants. That's the firm I had previously worked for just only a year or two after I got out of school. Had done a lot of that. And before I got back into the state, you know, I was hired by Rick and Paul. And then a couple of years later, became a partner, and it was just the three of us, so that became EOP.
This episode is brought to you by Bank of the Bluegrass. It's easy to preach about being a community bank without actually operating that way, but I can attest as a real customer of Bank of the Bluegrass that they are truly in the community and for the community. Whether it's closing a real estate transaction that needs some creativity, troubleshooting an issue where you need a real person on the other end of the phone, or just the simple fact that when you walk in the door, your banker knows your name, Bank of the Bluegrass has you covered. Plain and simple, the best bank in town. Bank of the Bluegrass, member FDIC. NMLS 421548, equal housing lender. DevelopLex is sponsored by SV and Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
That's awesome. So talk about the bug that drew you into architecture. And I find that the general public misunderstands or at least oversimplifies what goes into to being an architect. Could you debunk a little bit about it's more than just the traditional blueprints? Like, you all are full life cycle on all these projects.
Oh, absolutely. There's a whole lot more to architecture than a drafting board in a T-square. And of course, now those don't even exist. I mean, it's all computerized. But the biggest thing about probably being an architect, it's got a lot to do with just understanding how buildings, come to be. And it's more than just trying to design a floor plan or a nice elevation. It's really understanding why those buildings need to exist. And getting in the heads of our clients. We have to get to know them really well. It's one of the first things we do, because if you don't spend the time up front to really understand what their needs are, what their aspirations are, and their goals, then we can't deliver our best product. So, I always spend the time up front to, even if the clients are anxious to want to see something, we have to talk. And really get to know them.
Sure. What is your favorite part of actually being an architect? I'm sure your role has changed over time, but
it has. Of course, going to school, everyone wants to be the big designer. The starchitect, and there aren't many of those. But that's kind of your passion. Anyone that wants to be an architect should be a designer. But not everyone really fills that role, at least not in the primary sense. In EOP, there were three partners, and we all had different talents and kind of evolved into different specialties. And my specialty turned out to be, even though I enjoyed design in school, my role in the EOP firm became more of the person that made it happen, made it real. Whereas Rick Eckhoff was probably the big idea guy. And, Paul was a lot of, he had his own special clients and quality control and those types of things. But I kind of fell into the role of making our projects happen, particularly as the jobs got bigger. And the state, Commonwealth of Kentucky's been our largest client for decades, and they've been my focus for the most part, and it's turned out pretty well for us.
Yeah, and just to give helpful context, can you give us kind of just a few projects that you've been a part of that people would be familiar with around the city of Lexington?
I can. The one that people are talking about the most, or at least talking to me about the most recently, is a job that's just now being completed. Actually occupied now, but it's the Central Bank Center Rupp Arena project in downtown.
Just casual.
Yeah. That's a big job for us. Sure. We did have a partner, MBBJ, out of Los Angeles. They're actually an international firm, but their Los Angeles our office kind of specialized in the sports side of things. EOP ended up doing most all the work on the new convention center, where MBBJ really focused on the Rupp Arena side, which wasn't a total renovation. It was an expansion and an exterior. Certainly the exterior's all changed. But the interior bowl didn't change that much. And it was all because of budget, even though it was a huge budget job. You know, their competition has spent twice as much or four times as much doing facilities in Nashville and Indianapolis and Cincinnati and those types of places. But still turned out really well, and we're excited about it. Other projects that people may know is Southland Christian Church on Richmond Road, the old Lexington Mall. We were able to convert that, and right behind it is the Lexington Senior Center, which is a project that really had a lot of impact on the community, and we were amazed at, I want to say their enrollment in that senior center tripled within a few months of that facility opening. And every time we'd go out, it would just be packed with people, and it made us feel so good about that's sure. why we do what we do.
Y'all could see into the future putting a pickleball court there, too.
That is why I'm familiar with the senior center, too, as the pickleball court.
Well, one that we've got, it just bid, actually bid under budget, which in today's market is refreshing, trust me. And that's the new CTE school. It's a career and technical education facility for Fayette County. And it's taking over the old Harold Leader building on the west end of Midland Avenue. So that construction, we literally had just last week our kickoff meeting with the contractor.
And, what can you share about what will that look like?
It's a very unique high school. That's a four-story building, an existing building, really more of an industrial building than anything else because it was the printing presses and everything for the old Harold Leader. But it's a super strong building. It was built like a rock and makes it a little difficult to renovate.
This is what it kind of looks like from the exterior. It's just a big rock.
Well, it's going to look a lot nicer than that. We're going to make it more transparent. It did, like I said, it bid under budget. So we were able to accept several alternates that we had built into it. And we're real excited about the project. But as far as describing what it is, you know, when I went to high school, they didn't have anything quite like it. It wasn't, we had wood shop. Well, this thing's got aeronautics and it just, everything you can think of. It's almost anything that would be taught at a collegiate level vocational and training facility they're doing at this high school. And we're just trying to convert the building to facilitate all those various programs. So we're excited to see. It's the first one that, at this scale, that we've been involved with for K-12 education. We've done a lot of that type of work for KCTCS and, other universities and colleges.
So because I'm ignorant, I do need you to explain to me. So, they at that point put out maybe an RFP for the redesign of that building. And then what is your all's an RFP, request for proposal? Can you just kind of explain the general guideline of how you all would engage on a project such as that and what your scope of services would be?
Sure. Most of the work that EOP does is, we will go through a process and there's different routes to take to win a project. The one you're talking about is a public project, and we do lots of public work. If it's not for the school system, it's for a variety of universities around the Commonwealth. Or, as I said earlier, our biggest client, our longest client probably, is the Commonwealth of Kentucky and the Kentucky Finance Cabinet. And all of those use a public solicitation process. A request for proposal is typically put out. And it will solicit architects to respond with their qualifications for a particular project type. In the case of the Fayette County CTE School, it's an education facility, so it helps to have education experience and a background, which we have that, but so do a number of other competitors. EOP had an advantage probably with that particular building, and we played it as much as we could, in that we knew the building really, really well because there had been other proposals. That building's been vacant for a decade or so, and we had been involved with some of the proposals, actually two, that never went anywhere, But we knew the building really well because of that. Hmm. And we put together our proposal, and then ultimately were shortlisted, which is a process where they just narrow the field down, usually to three firms, sometimes five or six, which we hate it when they do that. But there's more work for everybody.
Sure.
But in this case, it was three firms, and we interviewed, and we were selected. So that's always us. We've got a bell in our office. We ring the bell when we win a project. And unlike a salesperson, that's when you celebrate. You made the sale, and you move on.
We have one as well.
We're just getting started. You know, yeah. when we ring the bell, that's we won the job, but the work is yet to come. And then, as we kind of briefly mentioned a few minutes ago, the first step is to really understand what we call a program. And it's really just getting to know the needs and requirements for the project, you know, and what the owner needs out of it. In that particular case, it was all the different educational programs, vocational, culinary. I mean, they've got all kinds of things going in that building. It's really going to be exciting.
Sure.
And now we're to the point, we finished the construction documents, which of course now are all done in a 3D modeling format, no more T-squares and paper and that kind of thing. Virtual reality was used to walk them through the building and make sure everybody understood what they were getting. And it bid, and now we've got a contractor on board, and they're ready to start work. In fact, shop drawings are pouring in as we speak, and it's that it's one of the exciting stages of a project. They go from point A to B to C. And this one is the start of construction. In the middle of construction, we'll all be banging our heads against the wall. But towards the end, it gets exciting again. And we're ready to see it open and see it occupied, which is the whole point. Get people in it.
So walk through, it's not just drafting anymore, but The virtual reality is a really neat mm-hmm. way to have clients see the vision that you all can just naturally and almost miraculously see. Where is the industry going next? What's
well? Let me talk about that for a little bit. You know, technology has changed our industry so much. Of course, that's true with so many industries. But I've been around long enough that I was the guy coming out of school that we were still drawing on with you know, Mylar, and which is a type of paper essentially, and T-squares and triangles. And I learned to print the old-fashioned way and all those things, even though I was right on the edge of that point where what we called CAD, which is an automated drafting tool essentially, was coming into the forefront. And so, you know, I got into that a little bit, but a lot of the later technologies ended up passing me by because I had progressed in the firm and was doing the administrative kind of stuff and the management. And we could go out and hire young guys, young and girls now. In fact, that's more than half the industry, by the way, to do it. You know, for us, and they were much better with computers than us old guys. But the technology has really, really changed, and it does allow us to create these buildings and model them in such a way that the client, we can walk the clients through the building. I mean, literally take them through the front door and up the stairs in real time. It wasn't that long ago, 10 years ago, we could do these, what we would call the computer animation flybys, but you'd have to plan them for like 3 days and then crunch 12 computers full time for an entire weekend in order to create a, you know, 5 minute video essentially of all animation of renderings is what it was. But now you can create a model that's detailed enough and you just, okay, where do you want to go? And you set the client next to you and you have multiple screens, or we also have the VR goggles, which can be really disorienting if you're not familiar or used to it. And where do you want to go? And we just walk them through their building, and they'll point out things, and we'll point out things, and it's a very useful tool, and it's a very exciting time to be an architect because of the capabilities that we've got.
Yeah, I imagine that eliminates some of the miscommunication gap maybe between a client and an architect.
It does. Also between the architect and the contractor, because contractors now, they're getting sophisticated as well, and there are clash detection softwares that allow the contractors to go in, and if they're laying out a steel beam, and that beam, for whatever reason, be it design or if it's a renovation project, you know, the existing conditions were different than people thought. If that beam is popped down through the ceiling, you're going to see it with these clash detection programs and when you go into the model. So it's not like you're trying to interpret all of this the way we used to do it in our heads and looking at two-dimensional drawings and trying to figure out how things stack up and layer. Now you actually get to see it ahead of time. And it's much more convenient, much less costly to address these issues when they're still, I used to say, on paper, now it's in a model, than when you're out in the field. And that's, you know, out in the field is not the time to fix things, because it's too much effort and too much money.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Steven at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project of windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say we build with integrity. Are you looking to start or scale your real estate portfolio in Central Kentucky? Check out Rapid Fire Investments. They find off-market, discounted real estate deals just for you, so you can save time and maximize profits. From single-family homes to multifamily apartments, no matter what your investment goals are, Rapid Fire can help you reach them. Sign up for their email list today and get notified when new properties become available. Just go to rapidfireinvestments.com. That's rapidfireinvestments.com.
Something you said, I guess, a couple questions ago that I've just been processing is you're referring to the Herald Leader building, and you all were familiar with the project because, one, you bid it already, and two, you were local. So I want to spend a little bit of time here and talk about Lexington architecture. Mm-hmm. But that project, or Lexington in particular, does it give an architect generally an advantage to be local to a project?
It depends on the project. I would say for a lot of the public work that EOP does a lot of, you want to be at least from Kentucky. And we team up. We've worked our way up from, as I mentioned earlier, we started out doing fast food restaurants, which is really a good building type for a young architect to learn on because they're complicated little buildings. And everyone is on a different site with different zoning regs and all those things. But we took us about 20 years, literally, to work our way up to the first really big project that we did. And it was the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet Building in Frankfort. As a large project, took up...
At the original Mayor Street?
Yeah. It's the one with the big swooping roof, if people are familiar with Frankfort. Mm-hmm. But that project, it put us on another level. And we knew that it was really important for us because it was either going to make our firm or break it. And the project turned out great. And it allowed us to then pursue other things. And, you know, being from Kentucky, we often have to team up with national firms because there isn't enough work of a certain type that you can really develop specialties in some markets. Now, if it's medical or educational, there are Kentucky firms that specialize in those because there's a lot of schools and there's plenty of medical work that goes on in this state. But I'll give you an example, things like convention centers. There aren't many convention centers built in Kentucky. And one of the first really big one that EOP did, we did some smaller things, but the first big one, we teamed up with a firm out of Chicago, HOK, big international firm, and we won the Kentucky International Convention Center in Louisville. At the time, it was by far the biggest project EOP had ever worked on, two city blocks in downtown Louisville. And we were reinventing that convention center and remaking it. But we needed specialized expertise to be involved. But on that job, EOP was the architect of record. And HOK, even though they were 10 times, well, probably 50 times bigger than us, they were our consultants.
And walk through architect of record for folks that may not understand that term.
Well, architect of record essentially takes on the responsibility for the project. And on the KIC project, we call it KIC, Kentucky International Convention Center, I was the architect that stamped most of those drawings. Now, we have engineering consultants and other consultants that also are involved, and they'll stamp their drawings. But on the architecture side, EOP led that. And it just ultimately, it means that's the firm that's responsible. And in the case of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, they always want a Kentucky firm to be that firm, even if you're bringing in outside national expertise. I think the real reason they want it is they know you're local. They know that if there's an issue, they're going to pick up the phone, and they're going to expect you to answer it. And then if you need to be on the job site, we'll be on the job site that day. And also, we stick with that job, you know, for life, essentially. I mean, we're not going anywhere. We're a Kentucky firm, offices in Louisville and Lexington. And, it's not something that we, okay, we're done, and we don't ever have to think about it again. These projects are very complex and evolving.
Yeah, and they affect the look of the city until the building's gone.
Have a big impact. That's one of the things that I guess intrigued me about architecture. It allows. It was something that I was interested in, you know, really as a kid, and the impact that architects can make on environments, on people's lives, really. I mentioned the senior center. It was so exciting to see, you know, folks genuinely excited about the building and having opportunities to do things that the old senior center just could not provide for. But I can remember as a kid, you know, when I got turned on to architecture was in the seventh grade. I know exactly when it happened because I was taking a wood shop class, and part of that wood shop class was mechanical drawing. We had our shop teacher say, okay, we're going to learn how to draw, you know, pieces of furniture or something. It was fairly simple stuff. And for whatever reason, it came pretty easy for me. And I found out later what that reason was. But our teacher, he kind of gave me a special little project. He said, design a house. Well, I didn't know the first thing about designing a house, and I was in the seventh grade. But I went after it, and it turned me on to it. And I've still got those drawings rolled up in a corner of a closet somewhere at the house. It all became about, for me, and I think for a lot of architects and perhaps engineers and others that are involved in the building industry, contractors, it became about 3D spatial awareness. And I'm going to tell you another quick little story that is interesting because it floored me when this happened. But my oldest son was interested in architecture. He ended up becoming an engineer, and he designs jet engines for GE now. But he was interested in architecture for a time. And when he was in grade school, he had it's like a vocational test or something where they test you and they want to figure out what you could be good at when you grow up and, you know, get a real job and all that. And he tested, and we sat down with the teacher, and he came up with two very different things, and this is really odd. He said one of them is he'd make a good architect. I said, okay, well, I don't understand that, you know, and I think the teacher knew I was an architect. But then she said something that I literally almost fell out of the chair because she said, the other one, I don't quite understand this, but it said he'd be a good fighter pilot. And she didn't know. My wife did. I almost became a fighter, but I wanted to do that. And I had talked to a buddy of mine who I went to college with who was flying jets out of Waco, Texas. He kind of talked me out of it because he said it was quite political. But I really wanted to do that. But when she had mentioned that and put those two things together, I said, how is this possible? Because those are the two things that I had a really strong interest in. But yet they don't sound like they have anything connected. But it turned out we did a little research because she was interested too and contacted the testing group. And they said it was all about 3D spatial awareness. You need that as an architect and you need it as a pilot. Mm-hmm. And but that was an interesting thing. So that's, I think it's kind of a natural bent, just like an artist or a musician. If you're not interested in being an architect, you probably shouldn't be. but that's true with so many professions.
Well, and that's really neat, because the folks that get to love their job and do it the best are also creating a community that 3 or 4 or 5 years of a project will shape what the built infrastructure looks like for 50, 60, 70,
well, absolutely.
100 years.
Yeah.
So,
you have to be passionate about architecture. I mean, to really do it well. And you mentioned earlier, you were asking about, and we're kind of rambling some, so I didn't probably answer the question, but what was it like going to architecture school? Well, besides the fact that we lived at the original Tally-Ho at 4 o'clock in the morning.
The one on Limestone.
Oh, yeah, 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 behind the old Kennedy's bookstore, mm-hmm. a little tiny place. It's the only thing open at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I think my record for not going back to the dorm class was about 3 days, or going back to the dorm. But yeah, now you need to be passionate about it. They did work you hard in school because they knew you'd work hard when you got out. Mm-hmm. And some of that has changed a bit. You know, we used to kind of wear it as a badge of honor. You know, you work 80 hours a week. That's kind of crazy. It's not a badge of honor. That's just not very smart. But technology has allowed us to get just as much done in a more reasonable time frame, and we don't expect that from young architects coming out. There will be times when the deadlines have to be met, and we make that quite clear.
Those dang developers that are giving you a last-minute markup.
Well, there's so many things that change. But no, it's life-work balance is very important, particularly to today's generations. You know, I'm not saying just one, because it's most all of them now. So we try to make it reasonable. But you still work hard. But if you enjoy what you're doing, what you say, then it's not work, right?
Absolutely.
So how would you describe Lexington's architectural style? And then also to put that into 3D, where have we been and where are we going within that?
Sure. Lexington's a very traditional town. I mean, I'll just come right out with that. And it has been since I came up here, you know, from Louisville. All of Kentucky is a, you know, a traditional place. And we're not known for being trendsetters necessarily. But, you know, EOP, my two original, you know, partners that formed the EO and the P. One was from New York and one was from Chicago, and I was the one Kentucky boy, you know, Kentucky kid from Louisville. As I said earlier, we were quite different in what our capabilities were, but also in kind of the way we thought. And it's probably Rick Eckhoff was the one that pushed our firm most firmly towards what we would call a higher level of design. You know, buildings in Lexington or even in Louisville, throughout most of the state, had been done the same way for quite a while. And there were firms that attempted to change things, firms like CMW, that had a certain style, particularly they influenced the University of Kentucky quite a bit back in the day. But EOP, we made a conscious decision to try to up the ante a little bit. And we have had some of our contemporary firms, Omni Architects, really respect what they've done in design and others. But we decided to push the envelope a little bit, if you want to call it that, and not all the clients in Lexington were ready to go there, but some were. And once we started getting some projects out there that people could see, a good example of that, it's not that old, but it's about 10 years now, and that's the Southland Christian Church project on Richmond Road. We've had a lot of people tell us they love that project. I've had a lot of people tell me they think it's terrible. It's because it's so unique and different, and it doesn't look like a church. You know, there's not a traditional steeple on it and those types of things. And that was actually by request of the client. They wanted to be more inviting. The people they wanted in there, the people that didn't go to church.
Sure.
So EOP has always tried to, you know, do something a little different, but yet something that still met the client's needs and was representative of the client. I think I'm getting off topic now. I'm not sure where we were going, but
and it's interesting. I think, you know, all of us are sitting here because we love the city of Lexington. We love the way that Lexington has come about, and like, it's really unique going to our downtown and seeing historically preserved buildings mm-hmm. alongside with something like City Center or something like your all's project that you just completed that are very new style, but they blend in. So really where I think the audience would be curious is, where is the architectural style, you know, as we wrap things up? And typically we ask our guests, you know, forward-thinking Lexington questions. Mm-hmm. You're a little bit unique from an architecture standpoint. Where do you see, you know, that envelope being pushed in the city of Lexington as we move forward?
Well, something that is absolutely critical to any project today is sustainability. And buildings use 39 or 40% of, or produce 39 to 40% of the CO2 emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, in the United States, and that's much higher than the transportation industry. Most people don't think of that. They're always thinking of cars and trains and planes as being the big producers of greenhouse gases. But buildings are by far and away the largest producers, which means that building owners, architects, contractors, building occupants actually have the opportunity, the biggest opportunity, to make a change for the good, for the better. And I will hope that Lexington and the entire Commonwealth will continue to embrace sustainable design. EOP, we had an opportunity 20 years ago. We went down to Berea College, and their president was forward-thinking and wanted us to do a green building. And we ended up doing some research and all of that, and Lincoln Hall, which was the administrative building, the president's offices were in it, became the first LEED certified building in Kentucky. And it remained the only LEED certified building for 3 or 4 years, which is a little unfortunate. But EOP did that. I became the first LEED accredited architect in the Commonwealth. And LEED, by the way, is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, which is the, I used to say, national standard. It's really the international standard for green buildings. But at this point now, there's half a dozen, actually maybe closer to a dozen different systems out there that you can use to kind of track where you're at. But the whole goal of LEED back then was to make buildings more responsible and, you know, more energy efficient. Things like, water reduction, recycling, all those things that you can build into a building to just make it less harsh on the environment, reduce consumption. And that's where I would like to see Lexington and the Commonwealth continue to go. Building codes have been changed a lot to sort of mandate it, with the energy codes in particular. But it's something that we can do for the environment, for our kids, and we should do it.
Awesome. Well, for all the developers out there, that's something that we've got to figure out how to do and how to just make it standard. thank you for your time today. And we appreciate all the investment you've put into Lexington to shape it to be a beautiful town that we all love.
Well, Ross and Weston, appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk to you. And it's not often that I get to talk about architecture in this way. So it's been fun. I hope it wasn't too incoherent or anything.
Develop Lex is a part of the Middletech family of brands. This episode is edited by Jacob Spencer. Emily McCarthy creates our social content that serves you daily.